Well, our speaker this evening needs no introduction, but as we all know, that this last week or so that he's been under the weather, and he's still not up to par, but he's going to speak to us tonight and give us the word that the Lord has granted unto him for this night. And so I ask that you give Glenn your close attention this evening. Glenn?
Well, thank you, Jim, and good evening, everyone, and welcome each of you who are watching us through the live streaming for our service tonight. Okay. I don't know if we want to turn the lights off on the side, if that makes it easier to see the screen tonight. And as Jim said, I've been ill for a while. I'm feeling better, but I still need to feel better. My voice is still a little hoarse. Hopefully it'll last to get through here. And it's possible that during this message, I'll have to take a few minutes to cough. I do have cough drops up here with me, but I haven't found them to be very effective. So you just may have to write it out while I cough it out. But hopefully it won't be too bad. The Lord will bless me and we'll be able to get through that. Is that coming up there, I assume? Okay. All right. I do have an objective for this evening and a message. And you'll learn the message when I get towards the end. But I'm going to tell you the objective right up here at the beginning is, during the course of this, I want to convey some thoughts and some ideas to help us really appreciate truly how amazing and awesome our God is. I mean, we know that, but sometimes we just get in the habit of, you know, our worship and things we do. And tonight I want to take a few little examples here and just really hopefully drive home just really how truly amazing and powerful and just awesome our God is. And that's why I've entitled this sermon this evening, Awesome God. As indeed our God is indeed an awesome God. I want to start with a very familiar scripture right in the very beginning of our Bible. Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. I would imagine we all have read this many times, quite familiar with it. But probably we all know that, you know, it's really beyond our ability to fathom how God could create all this. And we're amazed when we look around the world around us, the universe we live in, and all the things and stuff. But we probably have some preconceived ideas about how this event occurred and what happened based on our understanding of what the verses of Scripture tell us. But as I prepared for this time that I'd stand before you this evening, I was directed towards some information that's changed the way that I look at this. And I am even more awestruck with the workings of our Heavenly Father. And so that's my goal this night. I hope that you'll have a kind of an open mind and kind of consider what I say here, because it may be different than you have imagined this for your whole life. It is for me. I mean, I now look at these verses completely different than I have my whole life. And so I'm going to start with a little bit of science. For those of you that are science-oriented, what I'm about to say isn't going to be anything new. But perhaps you haven't really considered it in the light that I'm going to present it this night. Because I know I certainly have not. And I don't have time to get in great detail, so I'm going to keep this very generic. Those of you that are science-oriented, obviously I'm going to use some very generic concepts But I want you to follow along with the idea and try to apply it as the scriptures that we have here before us. And so to our knowledge with our science today, what is the smallest unit of matter that we know of? I think I heard some. The atom, correct. With our science, with what we know, the smallest unit of matter that we're aware of is the atom. The atom, as this little picture here comprises, obviously there are different atoms for different materials, and so they change the number of electrons and neutrons and stuff. But the basic structure of the atom is you have, if we look in the center here with the red and the blue items there, is the nucleus of the atom. And the nucleus consists of those neutrons and the protons. And orbiting around the nucleus are the electrons. Those are the kind of, I guess, blackish gray things you see with the lines. They move around the nucleus in an orbit as such. This image here is probably something we're very familiar with. Everyone's seen something like that, if not exactly like that, but have seen something like that. But you know, really, this does not accurately portray an atom. It does not accurately portray the dimensions of an atom, and realistically, they have to do it this way because of space constraints. Because in actuality, the electrons are actually much farther away from the nucleus in proportion than what we see in this picture here, which is the way we typically see it depicted. I tried to find several examples to help us kind of understand the dimensions in this little micro world of atoms out there, and I have three of them here. I don't know how super accurate they are, but they give the idea and the concept of just really how far away from the nucleus these electrons really are. One example says if the nucleus of an atom were enlarged to the size of a pea. Now, right, these are very extreme. We can't see this up there. You need a lot of scientific thing out there. If so, enlarging the size of a pea is really huge. So if a nucleus were enlarged the size of a pea and it were placed in the center of an average-sized sports stadium, the electrons orbiting would not even be in the stadium. It would be outside of the stadium. Another example, if the nucleus were enlarged the size of a basketball and placed at the Earth's core, the electrons would be orbiting in the stratosphere. If the nucleus were enlarged to 200 miles in diameter and placed at the Earth's core, the electrons' orbit would be farther away than our moon's orbit. So what this all boils down to is the electrons are very far away from the nucleus in the atom. And it's the orbit of the electrons that define the size or the volume of an atom. Whatever they're outside their orbit moving up there, that's how big the atom is. And as far as we know with our science today, everything between the nucleus and the electrons, as far as we know at this point in our understanding of science, is nothing. There is nothing there. And with that information, an atom is 99.999999999999996% nothing. It's 13 nines and then a 6 after the decimal point. An atom, for its volume defined by the orbit of its electrons, the space between that, and bear in mind the electrons are just moving around. They're very small, and they only at a moment occupy any space in that orbit. But that orbit defines the size of the atom. This pulpit is 99.999999996, nothing. But it feels solid to me. It appears solid to me. It feels solid because there are forces. The first forces that are holding electrons, these electromagnetic forces that hold everything together. And so it has, it's solid. we look at it, you'd think if it's almost nothing, I should be able to see through it. But because the electrons are moving around, and so they're occupying all the space of the orbit, as light comes through, it's still reflecting from those electrons as they're in these different places out there. And so the light reflects off the total volume of the atom. And so when I look at this, I mean, it looks like it's solid. Yet it's nearly 100% nothing, as far as we know. It's dependent upon the number of different atoms and different materials. They have different numbers of electrons and neutrons and protons. But depending on the number of electrons, their speed and the amount of the energy that they possess determines whether light can pass through it or not. Because there are atoms that we can see through. There's air in here. We know that there's air, but we can see through it because light can pass through it. Water, another example. Perhaps one of our better examples is glass. Because glass, I mean, I can feel its rigidity. I know that it's here. But because of its construction out there and its the electrons and the amount of energy, because when they construct glass, it's complicated, but the electrons actually slow down. And their energy is less than the photons of light. Then when light goes through it, it actually can push the electrons out of the way. And we can see through it. And we can see the nothingness here. And yet we feel the force of something holding things together. The only difference between this and this is the light is reflected off this and the light continues through this. But the structure, the basic atomic structure is still the same. Something that's translucent lets some light through, but maybe it changes colors, or such as our glass here, it gets somewhat distorted, allows light to come through, but it doesn't come straight through. It bounces around. Its wavelength changes. And so we see a different color or a distortion of its path. Or perhaps how thick something is, layers. I have a piece of paper here, and some light can get through it. But we stack it up 500 sheets thick. Now there's just too much. The light can't get through it. And so this evening, I want us to consider this nothingness. If you would, the current world population is, anyone know what the population is? According to the research I look at, you know, it's 7 billion, give or take 3 or 4 at any given time, you know. But it basically, the world population currently is estimated to be about 7 billion people. Now, if I wanted to, I want to find the volume of the average person. I want to find volume, not weight, because weight is dependent upon your gravitational force. My weight here on Earth is different than if I were on the moon or if I were in space. But our volume is the amount of space that you occupy, and that doesn't change. That's a constant. So if I want to find the volume of an average person, according to most resources out there I could find out there, the volume of the average person is 66.4 liters. If you replace a person inside a liquid water, you would display 66.4 on average. There are a few of us that might take a little bit more than that. But the average is 66.4 liters of volume for the average person. And so, if we have 7 billion people, and the average person has a volume of 66.4 liters, that means the population of the world is occupying about 464 billion, 800 million liters of space. That's our volume of the population of the world. But what if we were to remove the nothing? If we were to take out all the nothing in the atoms and reduce it just to the actual volume of the neutrons, the protons, and the electrons in the human body, how much volume would the population of the world be? Well, obviously, if we carry out that number, that 99.6% is nothing, then the substance is 13.04 is the amount of the volume. So if we were to calculate that out, what if we remove the nothing from the human population? So if we take our volume of 464,800,000 liters and we were to multiply it by the actual substance of an atom, we would find the volume of the population of the United or the world would be 0.018592 liters. Think about it for a moment. We're all kind of familiar with, I'm falling apart here. We're all kind of familiar with this 2-liter bottle. Well, that's not 2 liters. That's not even 1 liter. That's not even 10% of a liter. 7 billion people, if we remove the nothingness, is slightly less than the volume of 2 peanut M&Ms. It's more than one, that's why I had to put 2, but it's not quite as much material as we find contained in 2 peanut M&Ms. I could use regular M&Ms, but it would take more of them because they're smaller. So that's why I could get away with just 2 M&Ms. Let that sink in, you know. I can't even imagine 7 billion people. But if we take the nothing out, the empty space, 7 billion people could be contained in 2 peanut M&Ms. If we take that a little bit farther with what we know, and granted, we are not all-knowing. Sometimes I think science is a little bit off. But what we know right now in the universe is believed that in our universe, what we know is 96% absolute nothing. There's nothing there. It's only occupied by 4%. If that 4% is built on the same structure as we are here with atoms under the same guidelines and stuff, that 4% is 99.9999 nothing. One scholar I read conjectured that if that were the case, with what we know of the size of, we expect the size or calculate the size of the universe to be, and it's 96% total nothing, and the 4% that's occupied is 99.1 nothing, that the actual material for the whole universe would probably be less than the sand in an average size sandbox in a city park. Kind of mind-boggling, isn't it? So let's go back and look at Genesis again. Oops, I should have clicked through those. I'm talking and not keeping up here. Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. And darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Well, this word void in Strong's is the Hebrew 922, which means emptiness, voidness. I would say same thing as nothing. There is nothing there. Without form, in Strong's is the Hebrew 84:14. Formlessness, confusion, unreality, emptiness. I have oftentimes been amazed looking at this world around me. Sometimes on a dark night out and away from the city lights, and you can look up all the stars and in the heavens and across the universe, and amazed thinking, you know, God created all of this. And in my humanness, I imagine this humongous project, like we do when we're going to build a building or something, you know, this big complex, we need this and this and everything else and stuff. And I am absolutely amazed when you stop and think about it that God has created all this really with virtually nothing. It is not the substance of creation that is amazing. It is His power. It's those forces that hold those electrons in orbit, that allow them to bond with molecules and to come together. That in reality, there's almost absolutely nothing to them. And yet God, through His power, He's organized them that they have strengths, they have rigidities, they hold together. And He's created all of this out of virtually nothing but His power. And when I say His power, I mean, I'm talking about those forces that are acting, that hold these things together. That the way they act, they look solid, they feel solid. But the reality, there's almost nothing to them. Isn't that what Genesis was telling us at the beginning? Everything was without form, no organizational force, nothing holding things together, and void with nothing. And by His word, He brought all of this into existence. Now, this may be kind of hard to fathom, but, you know, it amazes me even more to think that God could create so much out of so little than thinking of this huge project, you know, with billions and billions and billions and billions of tons of material for planets and all that. That He did this with almost nothing. By the power of His word, with almost nothing. And so if He can do that with nothing, what can He do in your life? I think sometimes we so complicate things because we think everything's so complicated and that it's so difficult for God to do things. But if He could create all of this in the universe and everything with virtually nothing, what do you think He can do in your life? And I think that's what Alma 1492 is telling us. Yea, I know that I am nothing. As to my strength, I am weak. Therefore, I will not boast of myself, but I will boast of my God. For in His strength I can do all things. Yea, behold, many miracles, many mighty miracles we have wrought in this land, for which we will praise His name forever. You know, this makes us truly appreciate really how much nothing we really are. But more importantly than that, how powerful and how awesome and how amazing our God is, that, you know, if he could create this world, this planet, our solar system, the universe, 7 billion people with almost nothing but barely His word, what can He do in your life if you'll let Him? If you will acknowledge it? If He can do that with nothing, what can He do in your life? A living, breathing soul that He's created. I think we hold ourselves back because we think things are so complicated and complex, and how could God possibly? Well, if God can do all this with so little material, imagine what He can do in your life if you would allow Him. Continue in Jacob chapter 3, verses 8 through 13. Give me a moment to get a drink here. Nevertheless, the Lord God sheweth us our weakness, that we may know that it is by His grace and His great condescensions unto the children of men, that we have power to do these things. Behold, great and marvelous are the works of the Lord. How unsearchable are the depths of the mysteries of him. And it is impossible that man should find out all his ways. And no man knoweth of his ways save it be revealed unto him. Wherefore, brethren, despise not the revelations of God. For behold, by the power of his word, man came upon the face of the earth, which earth was created by the power of his word. And that's why it's birthed by the power of his word, because there really was no substance to it. It's almost no material. It's by the power of his word. Those forces that are acting to create and bring this all into existence. Wherefore, if God being able to speak and the world was, and to speak and man was created, oh then, why not able to command the earth or the workmanship of his hands upon the face of it according to his will and pleasure? And that's what I really want to emphasize to us this evening. To appreciate, you know, it's beyond me to even imagine that when I sit here, I look at this building, I look at the pews, and I just look at the number of people here, which pale to 7 billion people in the world. And imagine how little substance God needed to do that with. That it all came to be really by the power of his word and his force and his strength and his ability to command those things, that because of that, everything is spaced out. They have forces that hold them together. And because of that, they have strength, that we have various building materials, you know, different strengths. You know, steel is stronger than wood and concrete and all these different things. They have different strengths and stuff. And more of the complexity, you know, our human body. I mean, I can't imagine, it's 7 billion people, if you take all the emptiness out and reduce it just to the pure neutrons and electrons is, you know, 2 M&Ms, you know, how much is in Glenn standing before you? Some microscopic little speck. I exist and I stand before you by the power of God. And it's a testimony of what God can do with nothing and very little. And I think that's what he tries to tell us here, where we have a parable in Matthew 13, verses 31 through 32. Excuse me. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds. A mustard seed is an extremely small seed. It's a very small seed. But when it is grown, it is the greatest among the herbs. It grows into a very large tree from this very tiny seed and becometh a tree so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. That's really what God's trying to say. You know, really with the grain of mustard seed, you know, with almost nothing, he brought the world and the universe and mankind into existence. And that's what I can't say. You know, it's almost nothing. A small, little bit, a grain of the mustard seed. And from that, God brought in this huge tree from almost nothing. And that's the same way that he's brought everything around us into existence. My brother read this next one this morning when he was talking about faith. And some of the disciples tried to rebuke an evil spirit, a devil, in an individual, and they weren't able to. And they're brought to Jesus, and Jesus was able to do it. We read here in Matthew 17, verses 18 through 20. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart and said, why could not we cast him out? And Jesus said unto him, because of your unbelief. For verily I say unto you, if ye have faith as a grain of a mustard seed. Remember that example. It's a very, very small seed, just a little, tiny little speck. If you have faith as a grain of a mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. My objective this night is, first off, to help us really once again rekindle just how amazing our God is. How he can accomplish the things that he's done that's beyond our ability to comprehend. but more importantly, what he can do with such a little amount. And that's what he's trying to tell us here. If you'll just give him a little bit, what he can do. Just a little bit of faith, what you can do. If you can give him a little bit of hope, a little bit of service, a little bit of faith, what God can do with just a very small portion is absolutely amazing. When I put these things on the concept, you know, I don't think I'll ever, unless some new understanding comes around, which is possible, but the way our science is, with our understanding at this point, you know, to look out there on a starry night and see all that, I'm going to look at it completely different, because now I'm going to be amazed that God did all that with so little. Because in my mind, and hopefully yours, that shows me how much more powerful God is than I ever imagined. I mean, it's easier for me as a man to imagine this big old project. Okay, God's going to create all this thing. And however you imagine it, you know, oh, we got this, and we got this, right? Planets, we're going to do this. But it even more to me is out there that he could do it with almost nothing. It exists by the power of his word, which causes those forces to act, those electromagnetic forces that hold things together and make nothing into something pretty impressive. And if we can apply that same thing to our lives, and I believe that's what he's trying to tell us in the scriptures, if you'll just give me a little bit, see what I can do. But I think the same thing, we hold ourselves back because we in our humanness, we make everything complex. And we think, oh, how could God possibly help me in my situation? Because, there's so many things. But God's saying, no, you don't understand. I can do everything with nothing. Just give me a little bit. Give me a little bit of faith and see what I can do with it. Give me something to work with. You know, we good again? There we go. You know, 7 billion people that God's brought into existence with hardly any more actual substance than we find in the volume of 2 M&Ms, 2 peanut M&Ms. If God can do that, can you imagine what he could do in your life if you would let him? If we could just give him that little bit. Give him the little bit. Let go of our ideas, our concepts, the way we think things should be, our own plans, our own wills. If we could just turn it over to God and see what he could do. I always look, unless something changes with our understanding and science and stuff, at least for some time, you know, I'm always going to look at Genesis a little bit different than I have in the past. I'm going to look at these verses where he gives examples of something small, a mustard seed, and see what he can do. Those verses, I'm not going to turn to them, you know, but how he can make the weak things strong. Our God is indeed an awesome God. I don't understand how he does these things. It's beyond my comprehension. But I can stand before his presence, acknowledge his omnipotence, his power, his might. And if I could just find it within myself to be able to give him that little bit and see what he could do with it. If I could give him a lot, could you even imagine? And so this evening, I just hope that you can understand that my point is that what God can do with very little. That's how powerful he is. What he can do with very little. And so it makes me wonder, you know, really, how little do we actually give him? When his examples, you know, with his own, it's like, if he could just give me the faith of a grain of a mustard seed, a very little. I think we sometimes think that we're doing great and grandiose things, but until we can reduce it down to the very basics and turn it over to God and let him show us what he can do in his power, in his ability, we'll never fully understand his power. We'll never fully be in the awe that we should be of his magnificence. So I hope this evening I've given you something to think about. And ultimately all it comes down to is that God does not need a whole lot to accomplish a lot. And I think we oftentimes, we complicate that thing because we think that God can't help us because, and we make this big complex thing. Well, if God can do these things, he can do a lot in each of your lives. He can do a lot in our lives. He can do a lot in the body of Christ. If we'll let him. If we'll let him. And that's the invitation that you have this night. If you'll let God work in your lives. And not be held back by the chains of doubt. I do thank you for your time, and I hope that you found something of benefit this evening. And my voice managed to survive it. Hopefully it wasn't too annoying to you, but I do appreciate the time to stand before you, and I pray that God would bless us in this.